This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Ever want to just get away from it all? In vacation movies, some lucky characters do. They travel the world to idyllic locales, sip tropical drinks, and meet romantic strangers. And then there are the vacation movies that have us laughing at Dad after he packs everybody into the family van for what is sure to be a comic disaster. But vacation movies can also offer something deeper than sightseeing. They suggest a new way to see the world and ourselves. Here to help us unpack our picks for the best vacation movies are film experts Marcia Gordon and Laura Boies. Laura Boies, film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art. Hello, Laura.
Hello, Frank.
And Marcia Gordon, a film professor at NC State. Welcome back, Marcia.
Thank you, Frank.
Let's talk about this, vacation movies. I mean, this is a kind of an interesting theme in Hollywood, and it offers a lot of possibilities, Laura, wouldn't you say?
Well, people take trips to go outside of their comfort zone. And whether it's a positive or a negative thing, you get some insight into your own character in the way you deal with unfamiliar situations.
Well, and of course, vacation films imply that you are taking a vacation from something, your everyday life, right? So it's always about an escape. And I think, as with the show we did about holiday films, vacations get endowed with this kind of importance. They have to be amazing and perfect, and the family is there and whatever. So they have this kind of symbolic weight attached to them, which is often where some of the catastrophe can come from.
And the time pressure as well. You know, we right. have this amount of time to enjoy ourselves, so it better happen.
Yeah, and when I was looking over our picks today, I was also thinking, too, I mean, so many, at least American vacation films, are summer films, right? I mean, there's a lot fewer winter vacation films. You know, just by virtue of our kind of calendar with schools and stuff like that, that seems to be the time where that happens. And it does seem to me, too, that there are these kind of types. I was thinking about the fact that comedy, there's a lot of comedy, right? So giving us something to laugh about. There's a lot of romance, that kind of expectation, especially, you know, if you're alone going on a vacation out in the world. There's the drama films, and then there's the films where things go wrong. And that can be funny, but that also can fall into more of a kind of horror category where things are truly wrong.
And it does what Hollywood does best, right? I mean, if you can take us to exotic locales, it gets to show us these really, really pretty places, or the crazy things when the bear comes in and interrupts your vacation. I mean, so it's a thing that really works well for motion pictures.
Right. It's living vicariously through what you see on the screen. That's what the movies are all about.
Well, and I mean, in the early 20th century, there was one of the strong traditions in filmmaking were travelogues, where the camera could go to where you could not go. Travel was, of course, not as easy as it is now, but one of the things people enjoyed seeing was the places that they couldn't easily get to, either in their own country or abroad.
Well, let's take a look at or listen to our first film and our first pick. Here's Heather talking about the 2003 film Under the Tuscan Sky.
My name is Heather Frazier in Holly Springs, North Carolina, and my pick for a wonderful travel film is Under the Tuscan Sun. I just rewatched it and was struck how the Italian landscape is one of the characters. The first scene of the Duomo in Florence just makes your heart flutter, and the hill towns and the coastline just is a beautiful, beautifully shot film. And then the other thing that the film features beautifully is the food. She serves these amazing Italian meals. So it's kind of a vicarious trip to that Italian villa that you'd love to do for the summer.
Dear Mom, it's market day in Cortona. The piazza is an ongoing party, and everyone is invited. Clichés converge at this navel of the world. You almost want to laugh, but you can't help feeling that these Italians know more about having fun than we do. I eat a hot grape from the market, and the violet sweetness breaks open in my mouth. It even smells purple. I wish I could stay here longer, but the bell of the campanile reminds me of time. Ding, dang, dong, the bell says instead of ding, dong. I wish you were here.
Rodney.
Heather Frazier talking about the 2003 film Under the Tuscan Sun. I know I said sky. Where is the sun? It's in the sky. Same thing. Under the Tuscan Sun is the actual name of the film, and it was directed by Audrey Wells, starring Diane Lane.
Well, I think of this both as a novel and a film kind of linked with A Year in Provence, in which they were both escapist fantasies, mm-hmm. that you could buy a house in a foreign country where the politics and the culture weren't as oppressive. You could indulge your sensuous, hedonistic side and let go of all of the things that were making you miserable.
Yeah, and I mean, this is about rediscovery and recreation and finding that outside of your own universe. And certainly that's like one of the most romantic travel ideas that you can imagine, that your trip will actually change who you are, right, and the course of your life. And, you know, when we see that also combined with beautiful landscapes and amazing food and wine, and all, I mean, this is a very romantic imagination and of what a vacation can do for you.
It's a movie based on an autobiographical novel by Frances Mays. In the book, Frances isn't going through the emotional stress of reinventing herself after a divorce. Why do you think they did so in the film? Anybody have a guess? Mm.
So that they could add a romantic interest.
Yeah.
So that your vacation becomes a love equivalency.
Yeah, I think obviously for the purposes of marketing to an audience, that kind of romantic turn, that just bumps your box office.
Gots so. To be in there. Gots to be in there. Well, so exotic holidays in foreign locales, Roman holiday fits the bill.
The mouth of truth. The legend is that if you're given to lying, you put your hand in there, it'll be bitten off.
Oh, the hard idea.
Let's see you do it.
Let's see you do it.
Sure.
That's good. Cliff from the 1953 film Roman Holiday, your pick.
Yes, this is my pick for favorite vacation film. It's a movie I really love with Audrey Hepburn and Gregory Peck. And in fact, a number of years ago, we had One Day in Rome, and I announced that we were doing Audrey Hepburn's Day in Rome, and we did every single thing.
Tell us about the fountain scene.
We went to the fountain. Really is very close walking distance with all of the places that she goes to. And we went to the Mouth of Truth where, you know, you have this transcendent experience of pretending that you're Audrey Hepburn. And it was just really, it was a fun way of kind of becoming a favorite movie.
Mm. Yeah, and of course, this also has the romantic angle in spades, but in a very different way, obviously.
Because she has to renounce her romance and goes back to her duty. And that certainly is a very unusual thing for anyone to do in a movie these days, is put duty over love.
Right. Well, but also this is about a kind of escape in the same way that Under the Tuscan Sun is, really, when you get down to it, somebody wanting to be other than who they are and where they are.
Right.
Is that, can we date films or tell them by decade, by the locale, by where these vacations? I mean, Italy, was Italy a big place to go in the 1950s for films?
They had some great tax breaks after World War II for filmmakers. And that's one reason that there were American films made in Italy during this era.
What do you think of some of the other attraction when you talk about vacation films? Again, getting away, being out of your comfort zone, foreign locales, and then the comedy, that's kind of the other part of this, the fact that we can set up expectations, the perfect holiday, the perfect vacation. This becomes another theme.
But the other thing, when I think about the transition to comedy films, I think about all those trips, you know, that you take as a kid, growing up, whatever, you know, things go wrong. Right. And, you know, turning tragedy. I remember I had had oral surgery before a family camping vacation. I had had a bunch of teeth removed to expedite my braces. This is more information than the audience probably needs to know. But we locked the keys out of the car when we went to get a snack. And then we were in the parking lot, 100 degree weather, you know, going camping. You know, I've got my mouth filled with packing. I'm bleeding. You know, like those things, they are not funny. And then they're really funny when you end up being able to tell the story later. And so I think it's one way to kind of make light of what at the time is not a very funny situation.
Yes. And also another thing about vacationing is that nobody knows you. So you can be whoever you want to be, because nobody's going to remember that you had braces and so forth. So.
Well, now we all know because you disclosed this. And where were you on this vacation?
We were going hiking in camping in Joshua Tree in California.
So nobody saw you anyway.
Nobody saw me anyway.
Talking about favorite vacation movies with film experts Marcia Gordon and Laura Boies. Laura is the film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art. Marcia, film professor at NC State. And we'll talk more about your favorite vacation films on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Movies on the radio today. If you're driving out of town right now, can't blame you. You're on your way to a vacation. We'll talk about vacation movies for those of us who have to stay behind. Joining me in the studio are Marcia Gordon and Laura Boies. Marcia is a film professor at NC State. Laura is the film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art. Sarah Pescucci called in to say that her favorite film was done in 1988. It's called The Great Outdoors.
My name is Sarah Pescucci, and I'm calling in from Raleigh. And my pick is The Great Outdoors for a great summer movie. I just really love this movie because of the nostalgia of the 80s. It's a John Hughes film, which I'm a big fan of all John Hughes films. And actually feel like it just reminds me a lot of my childhood and taking trips with my family. And I love the back and forth between John Candy and Dan Aykroyd, too.
Why the hell would you want to come up to a plant-infested no-man's land like this and live like a barbarian for a week?
You wouldn't understand.
Try me.
I have great memories of this country when I was a kid, you know, and I used to come up here with my dad, and I want the boys to have the same memories. I would look around you, Roman, for God's sakes. This is beautiful country here. Take a good look.
I'll tell you what I see when I look out there. If you want to know.
Hey, yeah, I'm curious.
I see the underdeveloped resources of northern Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan. I see a syndicated development consortium exploiting over $1.5 billion in forest products. I see a paper mill, and if the strategic metals are there, a mining operation. A greenbelt between the condos on the lake and a waste management facility, focusing on the newest rage in toxic waste, medical refuse, infected bandages, body parts, IV tubing, contaminated glassware, entrails, syringes, fluid, blood, low-grade radioactive waste, all safely contained, sunken in the lake, and sealed for centuries. Now, I ask you, what do you see?
I just see trees.
Well, no one ever accused you of having the grand vision.
Nope.
Maybe it's all for the best. While the ambitious scramble for wealth and power, the Chet Ripleys of the world are just able to lay back and casually stroll along life's path. I mean that as a compliment.
Oh, thanks.
The rest of us are all probably going to die of heart attacks and strokes long before you.
I hope so. Wouldn't that be great?
It would, but it didn't happen.
The good news is that that vision has probably been realized by now.
Yes, unfortunately, Dan Aykroyd wins 30 years later. But it's a great film. And that's an interesting point that Sarah Pescucci makes, which is that the film itself has kind of a nostalgic value because it locks in time the values and the ideas of the time.
We seem to be in an intense 1980s nostalgia period, and I don't absent myself from having just a tiny bit of that. But, I mean, I was thinking about the vacation movies, which, of course, were like the big, huge comedy hits of the 80s. Did they go into the 90s? They might have gone into the 90s because there were so many of them. But, yeah, I mean, I think anytime you're dealing with things that have to do with positive memories of your family, they get to kind of trigger these nostalgic relationships.
Well, and also, I feel like in a way we're all doomed to vacation in a certain way, like our families did when we were growing up. For example, my father had this terror of checking into hotels because he was afraid someone would try to carry his luggage and then he'd have to tip them. So I have this aversion to checking into hotels. I always feel because I can remember sitting in the car, you know, and dad's trying to check in and will there be this confrontation? Mm. You know, I'll take that. So
for me, the movie Coconuts is why I don't like to check in a hotel. I feel like someone's going to rip up my mail. And, you know,
yeah. That's a good one.
It's kind of crazy. But it's another question, too, and I think this film does this for us. It's a way to put two people, two unlikely characters together. They're not going to be in the same room anywhere else. They, you know, they may go to the same church, but they don't, you know, they only, you know, sort of yell at each other in the parking lot on the way out. So how else are you going to get them together? I know, put them in a lodge. They're related to each other. Family vacation, right?
Right, right. And then also, I mean, and this obviously, this film does not take that opposition seriously at all, but, you know, putting people who are used to living in cities out in nature. I mean, it is, when you think about this insane idea, right, that you would deliberately put yourself out in this context that is so different from your day-to-day life, none of your creature comforts, and that this is how you treat yourself to vacation. I mean, and for a lot of people, it ends as catastrophically in terms of the experience as it seems like.
It wasn't a vacation movie that Jack Lemmon was at the apartment. Which was the movie where he ends up, you know, going on a vacation for his sanity? It wasn't a vacation, but he had to, like, go out into the country, and he just couldn't stand the crickets that drove him nuts.
Not the apartment.
Jack Lemmon.
No,
not the apartment. Another film. It doesn't matter. Not a vacation
movie. We'll do some research.
All right. Well, let's go on to another film. How about this one? Let Us Go Abroad now, because we're talking about the way Hollywood looks at vacation films, and that assumes a certain American aesthetic. This one, I did not know about Tati, the actor. I didn't know until I saw
this. And director.
And director. 1953 French film, Mr. Hulot's Holiday.
Hi, my name is Lynn Elwell, and I live in Durham, North Carolina. And my favorite holiday movie is called Mr. Hulot's Holiday. It's spelled H-U-L-O-T. It stars the brilliant French actor Jacques Tati as Mr. Hulot. There is no dialogue in this film, just lovely French melodies, but the film works, I think, beautifully. Hulot drives his ancient Citroën convertible to a French seaside town for a holiday. Tati is a total klutz, and he pretty much screws up everything he touches during the entire holiday. Dialogue wouldn't work in this movie because Tati was a very talented physical comedian. I mean, he looks funny. He's tall and thin, has a long nose. He constantly has a pipe, and he walks with this. He walks like bending forward, if you can imagine. It looks like he's going to fall over when he walks, kind of like a Monty Python figure. So I would be disappointed if it had dialogue.
You will be humming that theme for the rest of your life when you watch the film.
Yeah, apparently. So Tati is an amazing, if you've never seen a Tati film, I would just urge you to see one. It's, I think, one of the great treats of cinema. And his ability to kind of carry on the inheritance of Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton with their idiosyncrasies of physicality and then all of these elaborate visual gags. I mean, some of the creative humor that he kind of engineers in this film that has to do with being in a strange place and doing strange things. I mean, it's just spectacular. It's not the same kind of like riotous laughing that you do when you watch something like The Great Outdoors, if that's your inclination, but it's a different kind of humor about being a kind of stranger in a strange place.
And he had the split second timing of the great silent comedians. This particular film he worked on for over a year to make sure that everything worked with that kind of clockwork precision. And interestingly, it's a favorite film of David Lynch because he loves how so many things are happening in the frame at the same time. And you can never see the whole film with just one viewing, that it's an incredibly rich visual experience.
I saw this film at the National Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C., I don't know, 15 plus years ago. And if you ever have the opportunity to see a Tati film on a big screen in a theater, that is absolutely the place to see it because there is so much going on, as Laura pointed out.
Well, as I say, you can plumb the depths of my ignorance and not get to the bottom. And I had not heard of Jacques Tati until I saw this film and was blown away. And then I kind of joked to myself, because I'm really the only one who laughs, and said that this is why they love Jerry Lewis in France.
Right.
And then I immediately corrected myself and I said, no, there's what is it about his brilliance? Timing, you just said it.
Yes.
And again, the setup. And also, he's the guy who thinks he's perfectly normal. There's kind of Green Acres effect where there's something perfectly normal and not unwell with all of the crazy things that happened to him. And it's the world around him that looks right. a little bit crazy because mm-hmm. as far as he's concerned, nothing bad happened.
He's sort of the calm in the center yeah. of the frame while there are whirlwinds all around
yeah,
him.
Yeah, the kind of the obliviousness is where a lot of the comic poetry comes from. And I mean, and Jerry Lewis, I mean, he was so loud and yeah, so yeah. So talk-based, even though he had the visual antics too. And that is part of what is so powerful about Tati is that he is thinking about every single thing in the frame, and the humor comes from the kind of conspiracy of all that together.
They're very elegant films,
yes.
too.
Yeah, no, there's a huge difference in the two of them, to be sure. Well, let's talk about the father figure. Now, here's Kristen Pearson, who's talking about her trip, and I've got a lot to say about this one. Mr. Hobbs Takes a Vacation.
My name is Kristen Pearson. I'm calling from Durham, and my pick for favorite vacation film is Mr. Hobbs Takes a Vacation. It's a 1962 film that stars Jimmy Stewart, Maureen O'Hara, and a real great fun cast of 60s characters. And what it really is a classic family vacation story gone awry, where there's one enthusiastic family member who has the great idea to pack up the kids and the whole extended family for some mandated family fun, and then things go totally wrong, really right from the moment they pull up to their beach house, which is a dilapidated old creepy mansion.
If this house was good enough for Edgar Allan Poe, it's good enough for us.
So, you know, in true forced family fun, no one really wants to be there. The teenage daughter's just had braces, doesn't want to talk to anyone. The son brings along his TV set, and just the family falls apart. But the difference that I find between Mr. Hobbs Takes a Vacation and all the subsequent follow-ups, like National Lampoon's Vacation series, is that it has a sweetness to its core. You know, it's not that you're poking fun or laughing at the people. You're laughing with them. It's a lot more relatable, I found, even though it's, you know, over 50 years old.
Hey, why don't you watch where you're going? Hey, that guy didn't know where he was going. Fool! Dad, watch out! You're getting too close. Hey, where do you think you're going? Watch out! That'll teach you.
Mr. Hobbs Takes a Vacation, a 1962 film starring Jimmy Stewart, of course, directed by Henry Koster. This film, I have to say, it's my favorite vacation film because, and again, this is for nostalgic reasons, my mother took me to see this film. We got on a bus together. I didn't know where she was going to surprise. Middle of the day, I guess it must have been summer. Don't remember why. I would have been 9 years old. And we end up at a theater, and I'm watching this. So that was huge, except I was like, wow, I'm watching this movie with Mom. And then there's Jimmy Stewart cursing. I mean, hell and damn. But I'd never seen an actor say bad words. And I'm 9, and I'm sitting next to my mom, and I thought, wow, I'm a grown-up.
Finally, my life reflected on film.
I felt like a grown-up. I don't know if it was a good movie. I don't remember much about it, actually, except for his wife comes up and says, Tommy says that you were cursing again. And he said, I wasn't cursing. I just said, well, let's go down for some sun on the beach.
Wow, which that was good.
Not bad for just
that
on
was,
the spot.
And Jimmy Stewart is here in the studio with us.
Sun on the
gentlemen.
Beach. Anyway, I don't have any other memories.
Well, I kind of like that your nostalgia is bound up with this like mini vacation experience in your own. I mean, to get on a bus is not something you do in the middle of the day, to go see a movie. So I like the doubling effect there.
And I think there was a lot more confidence in the father figure in this era, too. I mean, in the vacation movies,
right.
The father is not a respected symbol.
Was this the beginning of the haywire too perfect vacation genre, or were there antecedents?
Ooh, I can't imagine antecedents. That it is.
I don't know. I sort of associate this in my mind with Please Don't Eat the Daisies, you know, which is moving out of the city to the country and... I don't know.
We're going to talk about another theme here, which is we can be nostalgic and like the fact that it reminds us of a time gone by, but can films go out of date? Can they no longer be relatable? We can talk about that in terms of this film, a fine film in 1969. If it's Tuesday, this must be Belgium.
Hi, my name is Chris Olson. I'm calling from Calvander, North Carolina, just outside of Chapel Hill, and my pick for the best travel movie is If It's Tuesday, This Must Be Belgium. It is a film about a bunch of Americans going on one of these compressed European holidays And it's got a bunch of funny character actors, and you get to see their particular plot lines as they go from London to like I said, basically, if it's Tuesday, this must be Belgium. They go to Luxembourg and Germany, and it's like they got a day, and then they've got to move on.
And now, for your sightseeing pleasure, Whirlwind Tours is happy to present 2,000 years of British history in one afternoon. So try not to nap, folks. You could miss a century. Our first stop, the historic Tower of London. Here, you're in the presence of one of history's greatest marital tragedies. On this very spot, Henry VIII had not one but two of his six wives executed.
What did those two wives ever do to him?
They suggested a whirlwind tour.
It's just funny. It's laugh-out-loud funny. And it holds up 48 years after it was made. It was my mama's favorite comedy, and I understand why.
If it's Tuesday, this must be Belgium.
So I had never even heard of this film before, so I went ahead and got it and watched it. And I have to admit, it is a wacky, all-star studded cast film. What I liked about it is that it was so mocking of the kind of American whirlwind tour, like, okay, we just need to check all these places off the list. And it's, you know, everyone's falling apart. Relationships are falling apart. You can't control your kids. The wife is doing this. The husband is doing this. And it's got that kind of madcap 60s omnibus film feel to it. But it's also a very serious, like, travelogue. It's a weird hybrid because it's really showing you the sights of these cities. So it's this hybrid comedy, but it's also, like, really giving you a glimpse at all of these places in Europe, these kind of major tourist places.
Attractions.
Yeah.
Wow.
Good place. Well, go ahead.
It's like a cultural mandate.
It might be. It might be.
Well, it seemed to me it's maybe the precursor to Seinfeld, where you just take some stand up, like great gags about families. You know, he made her go on a whirlwind tour, that kind of thing. It sounds like the punchline. There are a lot of punchlines that then get sort of acted out in this.
This film is openly hammy. Yeah, absolutely. It's like there's nothing subtle about it. The jokes, you know, cut at the end of the joke so that everyone knows that it's a joke. Right. I mean, it is not a nuanced film, but I mean, it's kind of a weird 60s romp.
Let's take a look at the film Before Sunrise.
My name's David Bellerath, and I'm calling from Durham. My pick for favorite vacation film is Before Sunrise, and it's about a young couple, young American man and a young French woman who are both students in their early 20s who meet on a train in Vienna, Austria, and they make a connection, and they spend all night talking and walking around the city. And that's pretty much the movie. And what I love about the film is that it evokes youthful nostalgia. I think a lot of people have memories of this time when they were young, and you really didn't know what you were going to do with your life, and you're full of this optimistic spirit, and you feel nostalgic for that younger, innocent you. And you might have shared this moment with somebody else.
You know, I've been wondering lately. Do you know anyone who's in a happy relationship?
Yeah, sure. You know, I know happy couples. But I think they lie to each other.
Yeah. People can live their life as a lie. My grandmother, she was married to this man, and I always thought she had a very simple, uncomplicated love life. But she just confessed to me that she spent her whole life dreaming about another man she was always in love with. She just accepted her fate. It's so sad. And in the same time, I love the idea that she had all those emotions and feelings I never thought she would have had.
I guarantee you it was better that way. If she'd ever got to know him, I'm sure he would have disappointed her eventually.
How do you know? You don't know them.
Yeah, I know. But it's just people have these romantic projections they put on everything, that's not based in any kind of reality.
Romantic projections?
Yeah.
Oh, Mr. Romantic up there in the Ferris wheel. Oh, kiss me, the sunset. Oh, it's so beautiful.
All right. Hey, tell me about your grandma. What are you saying about her?
No.
That's a clip from Richard Linklater's 1995 film Before Sunrise, which is part of an experiment, right? Because he's looking at those characters then over time. There they are. They meet one night in a foreign locale.
And that disappointment becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy as the films go on.
Yeah. So, I mean, and obviously you can tell from that clip, there's a lot of talking in this film. So this is not just a film where you're experiencing Vienna, although you do get to do some of that as well. But it is really about character. And, of course, Richard Linklater has become a kind of poet of character. character and duration with Boyhood. And with this film and its kind of follow-up after that. And I mean, this is a film, I mean, people are so passionate about this film. This film resonated with so many people, maybe of my generation and, you know, perhaps after, I don't know. But just, I think that David is absolutely right, that that nostalgia of kind of possibility and not knowing where your life is going to be, and that kind of imagination of your 20s and not having, you know, commitments and being able to kind of roam and have these experiences, I think that's a lot of what is at work here.
That was the fantasy that later became Facebook, which is that I can meet somebody who doesn't know me, tell them who I am, and have them discover the person I want to be known as, a la Facebook, rather than the person that everybody knows because I'm 22 and everybody's got it. How about if I go someplace strange and tell somebody who I am, the kind of guy I am?
There's also the link to the shipboard romance where you were on jail on a boat and you would meet someone and be allowed to present this completely fresh version of yourself.
Vacation movies on Movies on the Radio today. We will be back with more in a moment. Stay tuned. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Getting away from it all can sound like a dream, but in some vacation movies, these trips are far from idyllic. Take someone out of a familiar environment, and who knows what they'll do. We've been talking about vacation movies with our film experts Laura Boies and Marcia Gordon. Laura, of course, film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art. Marcia Gordon is a film professor at NC State University. We've been talking about some foreign films. Here's a foreign language film, all only in French, so we won't use a clip, but we'll talk about it as Justin Wyatt tells us about Les Rayons Verts.
Hi, it's Justin Wyatt. I'm calling from East Greenwich, Rhode Island. My pick for a vacation movie is Eric Rohmer's Les Rayons Verts, which was released in America as Summer. Very simple title. It's a very deceptive film because it seems like it's going to be about the wild and crazy vacation of a Parisian woman in the mid-80s. And what it turns out to be is a character study. It's about all the expectations that she has for her vacation and how she's dealing with loneliness and not connecting with people. So it becomes kind of a melancholy story in a way, based around somebody who is struggling with all the expectations and anticipation of what a vacation could be. And then, you know, reality sets in and there's some good things and some bad things. But the film ends, I don't want to give it away, on a note that really is joyful and magical. And really, it's a film that is realistic, but also kind of transformative. It speaks of character. It speaks of the joys and also the terrors of vacation.
That's Justin Wyatt speaking of the 1986 French language film Les Rayons Verts.
The Green Ray. Well, I loved this movie when it came out and I just rewatched it a few days ago. And you know how films really change when you see them over a long period of time. And now I see this character as someone with such extreme social anxiety that it's almost impossible for her to have a good time. And she goes on abortive vacation after abortive vacation with this group of friends, with that group of friends, by herself. And because of this social anxiety, she just can't connect. And I believe it was a collaboration with the actress who came up with this character. And seeing it in this way makes it almost difficult to watch.
Wow,
I think.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
I like that you changed your take on it so much between viewings.
Well, in the vacation setting, right, that frame can really help you, because if somebody's socially anxious in a particular milieu, you think, well, get out of that group. But there you are. You're moving from place to place.
And she uses the Green Ray as a magical symbol to help her overcome this anxiety.
Right, the desire to see something so much. But, you know, that's the reality. I mean, to be practical about a vacation too. I mean, if you are not in the mood to be where you are,
you hate the people that you're with.
You hate the people that you're with.
You got sand in your bathing suit. It could be anything.
Well, Laura, we'll talk more about your vacations on the next show. But right now, we'll start talking about a diary film, kind of a film diary in some ways, Reminiscences of a Journey to Lithuania. Marcia, tell us about this one.
Well, so I believe we have a caller for that. I'm so glad that somebody suggested this. I mean, this is not at all a conventional vacation film, but this is pushing the definition of what this this film is. But this is a very powerful film about immigration and returning home and place. And so in that way, I think it's a pretty important one to think about in this category.
My name's Brian L. Fry, and I'm calling from Lexington, Kentucky. And the quote-unquote vacation film that I wanted to recommend is Jonas Mekas's Reminiscences of a Voyage to Lithuania, a document of his return to his home country and hometown many years after he was forced to leave after being detained during World War II and then spending time in a displaced persons camp.
All the women of my village that I remember from my childhood, they always reminded me on the birds, sad autumn birds, as they fly over the fields, crying sadly. You led hard and sad lives, the women of my childhood.
And it reflects a kind of almost Odyssean sense of exile from a place to which, no matter how you voyage back, you can never truly return to that place.
1972 film Reminiscences of a Journey to Lithuania.
Yeah, and as you can tell, just even from that clip, there's a gravity to this film that we haven't really experienced so far. Mekas, by the way, is one of the founders of Anthology Film Archives in New York, very important figure in the experimental filmmaking world. But and he does these a lot of these kind of diary films, 16mm film, that kind of blur the line between amateur and kind of professionally made films. And this is just a really powerful statement about memory and understanding where your home is and where your place is and what's familiar and what's foreign. And so it, in that way, I really love imagining it in the context of all these other films that seem to have a kind of frivolity to them.
Well, people who immigrate to another country, sometimes they look back with nostalgia on where they came from, right. And sometimes they do not. And I remember reading something a long time ago about you know, Jews have a lot of trouble with the whole concept of vacation because historically they didn't take a pleasure trip. They went into exile. So there's always that little bit of I'm going into exile underneath every vacation
trip.
Yeah,
and to be clear, I mean, Mekas left, I think it was 44 when he was interred. And so, I mean, this is all tied up in very complicated military history, too.
Well, we're going to take a look or listen to another film that is not strictly speaking a vacation film, but it does have at least some aspects of the vacation films that we're talking about, The Passenger.
Hi, my name's Rob Phillips. I'm calling from Apex, North Carolina, and my favorite travel film, or one of my favorites, is The Passenger, a film by Antonioni starring Jack Nicholson, very famously. And in this particular film, Jack Nicholson is on a journey as a documentary filmmaker, and he's kind of dissatisfied with his life, decides that he wants to change his perspective pretty significantly by taking on the identity of someone who has recently passed away. And in doing that, he ends up abandoning his life as a documentarian and becomes a gun runner.
I just sold 5,000 hand grenades, 900 rifles, and a great deal of ammunition to some people fighting a secret war in an obscure part of the world.
This is a fascinating exploration of identity that just is just a beautiful film. And Antonioni's famous shot, long take at the end of the film, which goes in and out of spaces. It's, I think, around 7 minutes long. It's just this beautiful long take that I think sort of explores interior and exterior spaces in a way that sort of matches up with how the film explores Jack Nicholson or David Locke's character. It's just a fascinating film.
The Passenger, 1975 Michelangelo Antonioni film. It starred Jack Nicholson. And yeah, this film is a riveting movie.
Well, it's funny. I have a ambivalent relationship to Antonioni. He's one of cinema's great formalists, and the shot that the caller refers to is quite extraordinary. But what I like about thinking about this film is there's this line that Maria Schneider says to Jack Nicholson at one point in the film. She asks him, "What are you running away from?" And, you know, not a whole lot happens, quote unquote, in an Antonioni film. But that idea of of escape. I mean, that's something that we could thread through every single one of the films we've talked about today, whether they're comedies or not, that people are always trying to get away from something. And I mean, that's the core of what vacation is. You just need to get out of your place.
There is a difference between escape and alienation, though. Mm-hmm. Alienation has a lot more despair involved
right.
in it.
This is a film with a lot of despair.
But a lot of the films, particularly Hollywood films, will take you to that the exterior, what you're escaping to. And mm-hmm. Tony, what this film does is really keep you inside the head. So no matter what's happening outside, and you need that as a frame of reference, you're stuck inside the head. That what is it that I'm trying to escape from? Which is a nice perspective if you're talking about this sort of escape.
And it's something that's really hard to imagine in a way that is kind of externalized. And that's, right. I think, one of the challenges with an Antonioni film is that a lot of it is interior, visualized through a lot of nothing happening.
That famous shot, though, does that. Because,
yes.
again, everything happens, stuff is coming in and out of the frame of the window, has to be from the point of view of one individual and not from the view. I'm going to go to the phones now because there's a caller on the line. Jean is on the line with a film that we haven't talked about yet. Hello, Jean.
Hi. My film is The River Wild with Meryl Streep and Kevin Bacon and David Strathairn. It was really exciting, and it's so beautiful being on the river, and she does, I think, all her own rowing and everything. And I just love the movie and the music, the song The River Wild is through it. I just think it's the most beautiful, exciting movie. The husband never goes on vacation with him, and this one year he finally does, and doesn't work out too well.
attacked by a gang of thieves, I think.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, so and for you, it was the beauty. It was just the way it looked on the screen was
beautiful.
Yeah.
And Meryl Streep's resourcefulness as well is very inspiring.
Yeah, I watch it all the time.
Well, thank you, Jean. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
Movies on the Radio today with Marcia Gordon and Laura Boys. Our next film, Force Majeure.
Yes, this is my pick. It's actually very hard for me to pick. I was trying to think about films that had somewhat darker themes, and my original impulse...
Because I know that makes you so happy.
It does. It does.
But you have to think about that because it doesn't come naturally to Marcia.
I like to be the yin to your yang on this show, Laura. But I was originally thinking about Funny Games, the Michael Haneke film, not the American version, because it's a great film about terrible things that happen on a vacation. But I picked Force Majeure, which first off is a winter vacation film. It's about a family that goes on vacation in the French Alps, a husband, wife, and two kids. And there is a precipitating event that happens while the family is eating lunch at this outside cafe. I think we have a little audio
Here
clip from that.
So that was the avalanche, right?
Yes, so yeah. there is an avalanche that happens during this scene. And the film is really about how the father in particular reacts to this moment. And it is a very powerful, serious drama about relationships and about what happens when the person you think is going to behave a certain way does not behave that way. So this is a little blip in terms of what happens in the film. And the rest of the film is really about this husband and wife coming to grips with what's become of their impressions of who the other person is.
Because he grabbed his cell phone and took off.
And ran, yes.
And didn't really look back for the family. And it was a staged event, so nobody was hurt. And
you gave it all away, Frank.
Well, come on, that's at the beginning. The whole film is about what follows.
It's very important.
It is very important to the film.
And I've just been reading about Patty Hearst's kidnapping, and apparently her fiancé did the same thing. The Symbionese Liberation Army came into their apartment, and he said, "Take whatever you want," and ran out of the apartment, leaving Patty Hearst behind.
Wow.
So it does happen. So then the question is not just what happens in a relationship, but in Force Majeure in particular, how do you endure the rest of your vacation?
Right. Although that's probably the least of your problems.
Let's go to another film now. Our own Bill Smith, a famous chef and restaurateur in this area.
I'm Bill Smith, and I'm calling from Chapel Hill. And the movie that I picked is the Merchant Ivory version of A Room with a View by Ian Forster.
This is not at all what we were led to expect.
It's a really wonderful travel movie, but it also is a movie that deals with people coming to a place where they can give themselves permission to go their own way.
He doesn't know what a woman is. He wants you for a possession, something to look at, like a painting or an ivory box. Something to own and to display. He doesn't want you to be real and to think and to live. He doesn't love you. But I love you. I want you to have your own thoughts and ideas and feelings, even when I hold you in my arms.
And there were a lot of British novels of that period where people, usually like more ordinary people and often women, were suddenly realized, oh, I can do things my way. And this was one, and it's beautifully illustrated in this movie, which is a beautiful movie as well. It's all this wonderful footage of Italy and the countryside in Tuscany and the city of Florence. And the story is sort of silly, but it's also well aimed. So it's one of my favorites.
Room of the View.
So I have to say, I think that this film has almost come up more than any other film. You'd have to check the records on this. I feel like this has been suggested. I think we've talked about it on at least one other or two shows. This is a film that really I remember when
people
it came out.
People love this movie.
People love this movie.
And justifiably so.
Yeah. I mean.
Great acting.
Great acting. Beautiful photography. Yeah.
Fantastic costumes.
Yeah.
And you just watch Helena Bonham Carter over the course of the movie decide, I don't have to be that person that other people want me to be. I can be who I want to be.
And that is a beautiful, I mean, that's not the reality for so many people who end up, you know, being who they think that
certainly
they have to be.
Certainly in her, you know, class and gender and so forth.
Exactly.
At that time.
So that's a probably a liberating fantasy for spectators to see someone who acts the way that they want to.
And it
ultimately
kind of takes us back to the start, really. Those films that take us to another country allow us to see some place that we may not get, and also be somebody who we may not think we are. Movies on the Radio, Vacations this time. And Marcia, you've got a big event coming up.
Yeah, I do. So I'm doing, this is my third time doing something with the Science Communicators of North Carolina. We're doing something called Science in the Movies, Dinosaurs and Paleontologists. I am neither. I am just the film person, but I will be sharing the stage with some amazing local paleontologists on Thursday, September 7th at 7 p.m. at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences in downtown Raleigh. This is a free and open to the public event.
Science in the Movies. Are you going to do like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids? Because I've always wondered, like, how did they get and then get them back? See, that's
dinosaurs.
The thing. And that is just dinosaurs.
Is
it's got nothing to do with shrinking
dinosaurs,
the kids.
But we're going to do
just for you
a whole thing on shrinking technologies.
Because it's the restoring thing. I never got that part.
How you get back, I know.
So that's because I didn't really pay attention in school. We're going to do school movies, back to school, September. We're going to talk about your favorite film about any aspect of school. Teaching, learning, running away from school, whatever it is.
I love it.
Okie dokie.
Let's do it.
Movies on the Radio, Marcia Gordon and Laura Boys. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. And if you've got a favorite movie about school, WNC.org, you can tweet us at hashtag SOTMovie.
School students, especially welcomed, I would think.
Yeah.
Students.
Yes. You can also, like, there was a film that they made you watch in school. I don't care. Anything. Anything's got to, you know,
Frank will take anything on this show.
State of Things, Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton, Laura Pelliser, Jennifer Brooklyn, Robin Companies, our technical director of North Carolina Public Radio, is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.